It is Tuesday, November 16th. This is Jaguars Happy Hour. And now, a guy who almost left us to run away with the fair, J.P. Shedrick.
I missed it this year. He did like a funnel cake or something. Welcome in. It's Jaguars Happy Hour. Yeah, I needed one. My name's J.P. Shedrick. We've got a busy couple hours ahead here on Jaguars Radio. In fact, Jaguars analyst Jeff Loggeman, of course, every Tuesday joining us. He was drafted in 1989. That's a little while ago. We'll recap Week 10, the Colts over the Jaguars 23-17. We'll look ahead to Week 11. That's next on the schedule. The San Francisco 49ers come to town to face the Jaguars. The fourth home meeting for the Jags against the Niners, only the third here in Jacksonville. Remember, they played in London, the first London game at Wembley Stadium some years back. And the Urban Meyer Show starts at 5 o'clock with, you guessed it, head coach Urban Meyer on the Jaguars Radio Network, as always. We're recapping, of course, this past Sunday's Jaguars loss. The Jags defense had another good day at the office after an early surge by the Colts. They gave up 93 rushing yards to Jonathan Taylor in the first quarter, but then shut it down for the most part after that. They allowed only two field goals in the final 10 Colts possessions of the day, and that's good work to keep the Jaguars at least in the game, but unfortunately the offense couldn't do much with it. They struggled to take advantage of that good field position, and especially in the first half. Six of the first seven drives were three and outs for the offense, including three straight drives that started right around their own 40-yard line, coming off three and outs forced by the Jaguars defense. They couldn't take advantage of any of those. And then the special teams. A punt blocked early. It was returned for a touchdown, made it a 10-0 game. Then an offensive touchdown after that for Indy made it 17-0 and felt like things were going the wrong way. The Jags missed an extra point. Matthew Wright missed a 51-yard field goal as well. Urban Meyer on Monday discussing coming off a loss, taking a look at what happened and where they could have found points this past Sunday.
I want everything to feel different, taste different, act different when you win. When you lose, you just show the, you know, that's what videotape's for. And that's where you reward, you know, I always start each meeting, reward the guys that played really well. And then you got to show. I think it became that way in college as well, and I don't want to keep relating college to pro, but that's where I spent the majority of my time, that, you know, these are grown men, these are people, you have conversations with them, explain the plan to win, explain the situations where we lost by 6 points and where those 6 points could have been made up. And it was all over the field. We could have made those 6 points up.
Jaguars analyst Jeff Loggeman joins us now here on Jaguars Happy Hour. And, well, Urban's right. I mean, there were a few different places where they could have found some of those points. First off, good afternoon to you, Loggs.
Good afternoon.
I didn't mean to point you out, you know, drafted in 1989.
You're trying to make me feel old?
I don't know. That just came up in my head for some reason.
All
but
right, I hear you. You're trying to make me feel old. I'll take it as that.
It's okay. Your experience. Let's put it that way. I'll say that.
Yeah, that's another way of saying you're old. Yeah,
it's a good thing, though.
JP.
But
yeah,
with your experience, you've seen games like this before where, you know, one side of the ball is playing well, the other side just can't get it together, and then all of a sudden there's a special team score for the other team, and it's tough to win like that.
I can tell you that I've seen a lot of games in the National Football League in my years to where you have the start like that happened in that game, and where the Jaguars give up two quick scores, and then you give up a special team score, and then that's it. I mean, the game's over at that point, and it never becomes close again. So I give the Jaguars, first of all, give the team credit because they fought back. The defense battled back from an absolutely abysmal start to where they had just a couple breakdowns, but they never let it shake them, and they realized that, hey, look, we were just out of our gap a couple times, and Jonathan Taylor hits off some big runs, and that's what he's going to do because that's how good he is. If you make a mistake, he will make you pay, and that's what happened. But I give him credit because they battled back. Fortunately, the Colts didn't, like, completely stick with the running game because if I'm Frank Reich in that position – and I've got Jonathan Taylor with 10 carries for 93 yards and a touchdown after two possessions.
Yeah.
Carson Wentz might be lucky to touch the ball. Okay, it might be just like what Jimmy Garoppolo did last night against the Rams.
Yeah. right?
I mean, seriously.
Absolutely.
That, and so
he went through the ball 19 times in the whole game or something.
I don't what is it about former quarterback head coaches that they just got to feel the need to throw the football. Well, I don't get it.
Yeah, but
you're right. Give the Jaguars defense credit. You know, when after those first two drives of the game in which the Colts, you know, they go down and score and then you get a punt blocked and then they go down and score again, okay? Was that right? Yeah, punt blocks.
That's right.
You know, that's the exact way it wasn't. So the next three Colts possessions were three and outs.
Off the field.
For the Jaguars defense.
Perfect.
Great job. I think they had one, two, three, four, five total in the game, three and outs. Is that right?
That's right. And now in that sequence, there was a Devon Hamilton sack on the first three and out.
Yes.
There was also a big run on the second of those three and out drives that was called back on a holding
call. Thank goodness. And it was a phantom call.
That's right.
On Reed.
We'll take the three and out. I'll say that.
We were in, me and Tony Baselli are in the broadcast booth, and we're looking at the replay, and we're going, that was called? Okay. I hated it for Chris Reed. He's a former Jaguar, and he was a nice guy. But he got called for one that probably shouldn't have been called.
Either way, it happened. Gets the credit for those three and outs, though. They stood up big.
Yeah, the Jaguars' offense is out of sorts.
Yeah.
And you go back and you look at where the out of sorts begin. I don't know if they've ever really hit their stride, but look, in London, they played well. Trevor was looking good. Mm-hmm. And even in the game before that, I thought his pocket presence was just tremendous. And then the last three games, not so good. Well, what's happened in the last three games? Well, you haven't had your best running back up to full strength.
True.
Okay, he got hurt in the Seattle game with the heel. Did not play in the Buffalo game. And then he tests himself out, and he plays in this past game. But you can tell that he doesn't quite have that extra something that James typically has. You know what I mean? And you can see it like when he gets into the open field. And James is not an elite speed guy. He's not like an ETN. Once he gets in open field, he's going to be gone. That's kind of his weakness, if he ever does have weakness, is that he doesn't have great speed. But he's still got the ability to accelerate through a hole. And I didn't see that on Sunday. But I'll tell you this, JP.
Yes.
He should have started the game.
Okay.
Should have started the game.
Yeah, he didn't start. Yeah, Carlos Hyde took the opening snaps of the game.
And I didn't like that. And here's why. He's your best player on offense. Would you argue with that?
Not at all. No.
Okay. Is he the without question starter running back?
Yes,
best
I would
player,
say so.
Best running back?
5.5 yards a carry? Sure.
Best player on offense?
Sure.
If I've got a player who is willing to suck it up and play hurt because that's what's happening if he's out there testing his foot heel before the game to find out if he can play, even if I have him on a pitch count, mm-hmm. he's going to take my first snap. And he should take the first snap. He's earned that right. And I think that's something that I think if Urban could look back on in hindsight, he might change that. You know, because I think as a coach, sometimes you're not tuned in because, you know, players in the NFL, sometimes they have incentives in their contract for the number of starts that they have. Some of them just want the respect of being declared a starter, especially when you're saying, hey, I'm willing to play hurt for you. Then you have to be able to make sure that you give that respect back in turn, and that's by starting the player. And so I was a little surprised at that, and that, you know, hopefully James is not mad.
Yeah.
But I've seen players in that situation that will forever stick with them.
And it was only, you know, the first drive, Hyde, you know, and then they had the punt blocked in return for a touchdown. They come back out on offense, and James Robinson standing behind the quarterback,
right
beside him. So it gets a carry and a pass to him.
Put him out there for the first play. You don't even think about doing anything else. If he's playing for you, he should be out there for the first play.
Then there were special teams issues in the game. Whew. Punt blocked, and then a missed extra point, a 51-yard field goal. That's a long one. It was close off to the right.
You had two big special teams errors early in the ball game.
Yeah.
You had the blocked punt, and then they score, and then you had an okay kick return, you get a penalty on that. So you have essentially back-to-back penalties.
Yeah,
we're just back-to-back bad plays. And the punt protection is very simplistic. And it's not hard. I mean, seriously, if you can count four or five, you can do punt protection.
You only
need
one hand for that.
One hand. The punt that got blocked, it was three guys. If you're looking at, if you're Logan Cook and you're looking at it,
okay,
you've got left of center, there's three Colt defenders.
Okay.
Okay, and then you have, for the punt team, you have a guard, a tackle, and then a wing.
That's three guys.
So you have three guys.
Correct.
To block their three guys.
Yes.
Okay, and if you look at it, the wing blocks number one, and you count the defenders from outside in.
Okay.
Okay, so the wing blocks one, tackle blocks two, guard blocks
three.
Thank you. You're learning.
Thank you.
Okay, and when the ball is snapped, you set back. You're retreating a little bit. And the reason you do that is because, let's say, two and three decide to cross. Okay?
It's like a stunt.
Okay, right. Let's say three runs into the guard. Okay?
Yeah.
I'll simplify. If two and three cross, now the guard and the tackle have to switch responsibilities. You don't chase the number two guy all the way inside of the guard if you're the tackle. You block the guy that becomes number two. The problem happened, Chappelle Russell, who is the tackle, he goes to block one. So now you have two and three left to be blocked by the guard.
The guard, that's it. He's got to pick one.
Which is Shaq Quarterman.
Yeah.
So Shaq blocks who he's supposed to block. He blocks three. Okay, and two gets a free run. Now,
didn't even touch him.
Andrew Wingard sees it late, but he's got to block the right side because there are five over there.
Okay, well, yeah.
Okay?
It's important.
There's five over there. So you have, counting the center that goes to the right, that's four. Personal protector was Wingard. He becomes five. So he's got to go to the right side initially. One of them blocks, or actually steps out and leaves, doesn't come. So now he makes sure that everything's clean at the center before he cheats and looks to the left side. By that time, two's already passed. You know, so a lot of people thought, well, it was Wingard that gave up. No, that's not Winger's responsibility. The fact that Winger got a piece of him was good. I mean, because most PPs wouldn't even have gotten a piece of him. So the mistake was is that Chappelle should have been on what became number two, and he was blocking number one.
I don't remember that being an issue yet this year. I don't feel like many have been close to being blocked this year.
Well, look, punt protection
off the top of my head.
Punt protection when it's like that is not hard. Okay.
Yeah.
It can be difficult if you have four or five guys lined up, and then you have, let's say, four on the line of scrimmage, and then two behind.
Who's coming, who's not.
And then all of a sudden they mix and match and stunt and do all this kind of stuff because then you can kind of lose count. But when you have just two guys crossing, that's not very hard. That's like punt protection basics. I mean, that's one of the easier stunts that there is to pick up. That's not hard at all. And the Jaguars were fortunate. There was one other punt that had some leakage that could have been an issue later in the game. So you had two. So here's what's going to happen. The 49ers, they're coming. Make no mistake.
Yeah, test it out.
49ers are coming to block punts this week. So you better get it cleaned up because they are coming, and they're going to come nearly every time. I guarantee you that.
I mean, he was so clean, he nearly took the ball off Logan's foot.
Could have tackled him. He really could have.
Yeah.
If he had accelerated through the hole
right.
and realized that he wasn't going to get blocked, because I think it was almost in shock. Right. But if he had accelerated through on the from the snap of the ball, he literally could have tackled Logan Cook before he even started to take the second step in the punt. And so that's one. My point is that this week you better be ready.
Here we go.
Because what they call it, the people sometimes call it the copycat league, which is smart football. Because if you're getting ready to play a team that had an issue with a particular play, you better make damn sure you're going to try to make sure that they fixed it. Because if they hadn't fixed it, you want to make sure that you are there to take advantage of it.
Yeah, get that opportunity because that could come around. PRI Productions, the official event production company of the Jags, has everything you need to bring your next idea to life. Visit PRIProductions.com. We're back with offensive talk. Logs, we're going to get some answers out of you.
I got answers for you, JP. I got answers.
We got plenty of questions. Let's see if you have all the answers.
I got answers about wide receivers.
Oh, we'll talk about that and plenty more ahead. It's Jaguars Happy Hour on the Jaguars Digital Network.
Like I said, I'm hard on myself, and I expect to play really well every game and put us in a position to win. And just a lot of reasons offensively, we just didn't play great today. I thought we picked it up a little bit at the end of the third, mostly in the fourth quarter. But we just got to play better, and that starts with me. And so I'm hard on myself and got to get better. But, I mean, yeah, there's going to be things you got to go through and stay positive. That's what I'm doing right now. And, you know, the locker room is in, you know, good spirits. Obviously, we're pissed off. We, you know, had a chance to win that game, should have won that game and didn't. So, but, you know, locker room's good, and you know, I'm good. Just got to, you know, let it simmer for a day and then move on, and we got to go play San Francisco. So
let it simmer for a day. That's the quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, who was 16 of 35 passing for 162 yards. He was sacked three times, lost the fumble at the end of the game, ran the ball five times for 33 yards, and welcome back. It's Jaguars Happy Hour. JP Shadrick with Jeff Lagerman, Joe Fortunato, Brent Reber along with us today also, and the Jaguars face the 49ers. We'll get to that team coming up in just a little bit, but Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars offense, they had 7 3-and-outs in the first half. No, 6 3-and-outs in the first half, in the first 7 drives.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they had the Agnew touchdown run on a 4-play drive. They had a 6-play drive for a field goal with the final gun. 56-yard field goal, by the way. So they couldn't move the ball outside of those two scoring drives at all.
Well, it wasn't very good, and I think the thing that that concerned me is that it almost looked like Trevor's play regressed. I think that was his worst game as a pro yet. And look – it's never going to be smooth and perfect as a rookie as far as, okay, every week you see him get better. I mean, but it's like stock market. It's up, down sometimes, but you just want the progression to still continue up. And the last three games make you kind of go, well, has he progressed? And I think you'd have a hard time pointing to the numbers to say that he has progressed. Early in that game, the play that I didn't like was it was play action. He rolls out. His receiver that was supposed to be in the flat gets picked off by defensive end. And so now he's lost his short immediate option, and he throws it up. And when he threw it up, it was the defensive back, and I think it was Kenny Moore dropped it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was right there in the hands to be caught by Kenny Moore, and he drops it. That's like one of those things where you go all the way back to the first couple weeks of the season and you just got to say, well, you can't do that. And then I thought at times his pocket presence wasn't good and that the eyes dropped a couple times, which that's something that we really haven't seen with him yet. And part of that is that the offensive line needs to be better earlier in the game, but also you go to the sack at the very end of the game, okay? Got a chance to win the game.
You're in plus territory. I mean, you're in their side of the field.
And I'm talking a great chance to win the game.
Two timeouts left.
You got plenty of time.
Right.
So on the play that he gets the sack calls fumble on him, he drops back. The Colts are bringing pressure. You've got it picked up. Okay? Just needs to climb the pocket. Step forward a little bit. Shuffle his feet forward. Keep it balanced. And make the throw, and I think it's Marvin Jones coming across right in front of him. And his eyes drop, and he kind of goes to run. Okay, if you're going to do that, now you have to take the next step, which is ball security. Tuck it away. And he doesn't do a good job with that. So two mistakes there. Really, three. One, he should have just stepped up into the pocket, climbed the pocket, realizing that he had the protection. He doesn't do that. Should have made a throw. Doesn't do that. Okay, now you decide to run it. Okay, when you do, tuck the ball away and protect it. Because if you take a sack there, line up and play another play.
Yeah, or call a timeout, whatever it takes.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
I mean, you're okay.
You got time.
And so that wasn't a great sequence for him. But the first play of that drive, He gets sacked because Norwell got beat by Buckner. Mm. So, I mean, you sit there and you go, well, why do the eyes drop? Well, first play of the drive.
DeForest Buckner's coming
you got,
on your
you got whacked.
Backside.
Yeah,
right.
He got whacked. Yeah. You know, so, and there were times where he didn't have a whole lot of receiver separation. So, it was not a good performance. And that's the hard thing of being a quarterback in the National Football League. JP, it is by far, it is the hardest position to play in all of professional sports. And it's not even close. So, it takes time, and unfortunately, it takes some growing pains and some hard lessons.
You know, it brings me to last night. I fell asleep at halftime of the Monday night game, but
me
watched
too.
Peyton and Eli again, right, on the ESPN 2 feed.
Okay, how was that?
And so it was great. So to the point here, Phil Mickelson was on with them, and Phil was doing a great job asking.
Okay, well, real quick. Does Phil have a golf tournament this week?
No.
Okay, good. If he did, don't pick him.
And he said, yeah, I took off this week for a reason because the curse is real. Anyway, he was asking about, hey, what happens, Peyton, when you're at the line? Like, what is your progression from when you break the huddle to the snap as a quarterback? And Peyton went through it. You start from the line and go back. It's how many guys are down up front. What's going on with the linebackers? Is there a guy off to the side? What's the secondary doing? One high, two high safeties? What's the deal here? And that's all within like 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot to think about even pre-snap, and then everything happens once the ball snapped. That's all happening.
Mm-hmm.
And for a rookie and all that going on, I know it's Trevor Lawrence. He's been at it for a little while. That's a lot to digest as a quarterback.
It's a lot. And that's why you – rarely, if ever, see a rookie that has great success. The ones that do have great success play the game in a very loose fashion. When I say that, I mean, you see the running quarterbacks have success in their rookie year because they're not being forced to drop back and play quarterback. They're
just doing playground.
They're doing college football quarterback things,
right.
Okay? And like, you know, when RG3 was with Washington Redskins, they did a lot of that, some of that. You know, the read option stuff becomes part of the game. And, you know, you hear a lot of people say, well, how come they don't do more RPO stuff with Trevor? And here's the thing. They do RPO stuff with Trevor. But at the end of the day, do you want to expose your quarterback to more hits?
Right.
No.
No, not at all.
I don't want a young quarterback out there running and risking the development to where he can't play the rest of the season because I want to – have him gain 8 yards for one game. I mean, if you look at it from a big picture standpoint, that's very short-sighted. You have to look at it from the big picture perspective and deal with some of the things that he's going to have with growing pains. But in the long run, it's more beneficial. But to go back to this again, mm-hmm. I'm going to reiterate this.
Mm-hmm.
The last 3 games have not been on the trajectory that you want. It needs to get better. And again, that coincides without James Robinson being at his best.
It would help if you know, the receivers, the play out there improved a little bit down the field, right? I mean,
there was one guy, JP. The receivers got to get better separation. I'm going to tell you that there was one wide receiver that I thought deserved a game ball.
Who would that be?
Laquon Treadwell.
Treadwell?
Yes, sir.
Really?
Yep. I thought he played really well.
I mean, you say that. He didn't have, you know, what do you have, one catch?
Yeah, tell me about that catch. You remember that catch? Third and –
kind of off balance.
Third and 12,
him.
Way behind him high?
Yeah.
Hell of a catch.
Great catch. That's one play, though, Logs.
First catch as a Jaguar.
Why else should he get a game ball?
And we've got this audio, okay, because the great Vince Lombardi had a famous play. Then this goes back football from years ago. Yes. Let's just play this, and then I'll explain, okay?
If the end has the linebacker taken in, he will come around it and seal inside. What we're trying to get is a seal here and a seal here and try to run this play in the alley.
Yeah. All right, that's Vince Lombardi, of course.
One of the greatest NFL films segment that there has ever been.
Yeah, it's the Green Bay sweep.
And if anybody ever wants to check it out, just all you got to do is go to YouTube and type Lombardi seal. S-E-A-L, not like – so because what he's saying is –
not S-E-A-L? Wait a minute.
Not like what?
Not like the the animal that you see S-E-A-L, same way. But not like the animal seal, with the seal, like a Ziploc bag seal. You're trying to get a seal here and a seal here.
Yes, you
it's
are.
It's a great video. And when I saw the 66-yard touchdown run by Jamal Agnew, it came right to my mind, the Vince Lombardi little piece. And sure enough, it's very similar. That play, you have shotgun with Jamal Agnew lined up offset. And by the way, we're going to be drawing this for Jags Wired tomorrow night.
How convenient.
Okay.
How about that?
And you got to get a seal. And the seal happens from a couple different guys, okay? Manhurts blocks down. There's an inside seal. And then you have Laquon Treadwell coming down and blocking Darius Leonard.
Wow. Oh, against one of the great tackling linebackers in football.
All pro.
Yeah.
Darius Leonard.
Yeah.
Okay, and he doesn't just block him. He owns him. I'm telling you, go back and watch that play.
Well, I'm going to watch Jags.
And watch Laquon Treadwell on him, because he does a great job. So then you got to have the seal to the outside.
Yeah, you got a seal here and then a seal there. So we're talking about the there one.
So we talked about the seal here, because the seal here is Manhurts.
Yes.
Laquon Treadwell. Uh-huh. And then Shatley, who has one of the hardest jobs on the play. He's got to hike the shotgun snap. Then he has to pull around Manhurts, because he has to block the backside linebacker.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Not an easy block.
No.
Not an easy job to snap and then pull and then block. And then the seal to the outside is Cam Robinson kicking out the defensive back, and then the safety will be unblocked. So you're hoping that the running back can beat him one-on-one.
Right.
The Colts actually had a nickel blitz coming from the backside, rotate the safeties, and the safety goes back to the deep middle. So by the time he realizes what's coming, he goes to chase Jamal Agnew down, and then the speed of Agnew negates the angle, and it's six. But that's the Lombardi play.
That's the Packers sweep. And 21.6 miles per hour on that run by Agnew, the fourth fastest in the league this year. Fourth fastest.
Yeah, I mean, you could tell. I mean, when the safety was trying to catch up,
see ya.
It wasn't happening.
No chance.
I was in a booth, literally. As soon as he got to the outside, I had my hands in the air. You know, and the safety looked like he had an angle. I said, there's no way. I had my hands in the air. Touchdown. Knew
you
it.
Called it. You called it.
Gone.
Way to go.
Seal here and a seal we here and right in the alley.
Some more of those. oh, thanks. That wrong seal, Joe. But I get where you're going. We're back in a moment. We'll look ahead to the San Francisco 49ers. They're coming to town in week number 11. And check out the official Jaguars Podcast Network lives. It's free on Apple, iTunes, or Spotify. Yes.
They got a lot of seals in San Francisco, by the way.
They do. They do. Absolutely they do.
I've seen them.
They're everywhere.
I know it's true.
That's right. This is Jaguars Happy Hour on the Jaguars Digital Network.
Jaguars Happy Hour is brought to you by TIAA Bank. Turn potential into progress. And by Publix, where shopping is a pleasure.
For whatever reason, one of those stretches where we're a little out of sync and we got to get it fixed. It's just details all around every position group. It's cleaning up the details, being on the same page, and then just as simple as making the plays. I mean, there were so many opportunities today. Missed a few throws, had some drops, like all over the field. You know, we gotta make those plays, and that's on all of us. And just that's what's frustrating, is when you lose a game like that on the final drive, you fumble and game's over when you had a chance to win, but then you look back and you had so many opportunities to execute on and put yourself in the situation to get points or to score or whatever, and we didn't. And the defense played great. I mean, that's 2 weeks in a row. I love the way our defense is playing. They, you know, if they keep doing that, we're going to have a chance to win every game. And us as an offense, we got to take some responsibility and get better and put the right foot forward. So we'll do that. We got to just stick together, and we're going to do that. But definitely need to play better.
The quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, after the game Sunday in Indianapolis. And welcome back. It's Jaguars Happy Hour. JP Shadrick, Jeff Loggeman. Coming up, in a little less than 30 minutes, it's the Urban Meyer Show on the Jaguars Radio Network featuring, you guessed it, head coach Urban Meyer. He'll join us. We'll recap the game, look ahead to San Francisco We'll get an early preview of San Francisco in this segment here. Well, last night, they beat the hell out of the Rams.
Mm, good. Really good team.
I mean, beat them.
Yeah, you know, I'm saying the Rams, really good team.
Yeah.
I question a little bit with the Rams in that why would you risk maybe upsetting some chemistry things by bringing in an Odell Beckham? I think that's a question mark. Von Miller, I don't think is a question mark because the guy is an A-plus guy. But when you have an offense that's just running so well with the pieces that they have,
yeah,
why would you risk disrupting that by bringing in a guy who, unless he's kind of the center of attention, he's never been happy?
Well, the trick now is with Robert Woods out, he tore his knee up.
Which
happened on Friday.
Was
after
crazy,
they signed
the timing of it.
Like, it's, you know, maybe it'll work out. But, I mean, they didn't have him, and they looked lost on offense.
Yeah. I know Troy Aikman did a radio interview early this morning. I got a lot of respect for Troy. I know him very well. And Troy usually doesn't say anything unless he really believes it. And he talks about how, as a quarterback, when you bring in a guy like that, it can upset the balance. And because you have a guy that kind of commands demands, either way you want to put it, the ball. And so it can distract a quarterback from doing what he's supposed to do, which is deliver the ball to the open receiver, irregardless of who they are or what number they're wearing. And I thought Troy was, you know, he's being fair. And, I mean, Troy had Michael Irvin and Alvin Harper and guys that were really good, but Troy threw to the open guy.
Yeah.
You know, even though Michael Irvin may not have liked it, you know, that he made sure that it was going to the open guy. So I think that's going to be interesting to watch. What happens to the Rams and Matt Stafford now that Odell Beckham has arrived? And if you track the numbers between or from prior to last night, and so you look at that and then you look at from last night going forward, it'll be interesting to see where it goes.
Well, the 49ers defense, you know, held the Rams to their lowest point total and lowest yardage total of the season, by the way. But, you know, San Francisco held the ball offensively. They ran the ball a bunch. Time of possession was like 40-20. I mean, it was crazy.
And I just pulled it up.
Yeah.
49ers had the ball 39 minutes and 3 seconds.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Okay, 64 plays. The Rams had 54 and only 20 minutes, 57 seconds,
yeah,
time of possession.
Yeah.
And the 49ers came out and said, we're going to play smash mouth football, and you can't handle it.
They're doing this toss stuff and, like,
ran
just
the
running the ball all day.
But Debo Samuel into the backfield, too,
yeah,
at times, because he's your best player, and that's what you do with your best player. If you're not going to throw the ball a lot, Debo Samuel can run the ball just like a running back. He's good now.
Yeah.
He's good, and I think they did a really good job with the game plan, and I think it's going to be a challenge. It's strength on strength a little bit this week. 49ers are going to come out and try to run the football against the Jaguars, and the Jaguars have been pretty good against the run.
The 49ers offensive rankings this year, well, they're 13th in the league in total offense, 13th in rushing, 13th in passing. They are number one in the red zone, though. Once they get close, they finished with points, number one in the league, in fact, in red zone offense. Goal to go, they're in the top five, and they score middle of the pack, but they give the ball away a good bit. 14 giveaways this year on offense. But if they put together a performance like last night, they're going to kind of hang around in the NFC wild card chase, that's for sure.
Well, they should, and I think something that has certainly – or I would say, is taking them off track a little bit. The whole drafting of Trey Lance.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what do you think, first off, of Garoppolo? Obviously, they ran the ball so much last night and do a good bit. And then they've got Lance in the, third overall? I mean, that's a lot of quarterback equity there.
Well, first of all, I like Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, if you look at the numbers, when they have him, they win. The problem with Jimmy Garoppolo has been he hasn't been available. And so I understand why they end up drafting a quarterback and utilizing those type of resources to bring in who they feel is going to be a generational type prospect, because Trey Lance is super athletic. He's got a great arm. And when I say great arm, the arm strength is there to make all the throws. He was highly successful at college. So I think there's a lot of upside there. But it's you know, when you draft a quarterback like that, you're basically telling your team that the guy that we have is our guy, is not our guy. And this is different than the Packers drafting Jordan, or what's his name, Love.
Love, Jordan Love.
Jordan Love. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's different. Okay, Jordan Love was taken like in the latter part of the first round. That's the message from that is that we feel like that we want to develop a guy for the future. When you draft a guy at third overall, it's saying we're drafting this guy to be the future, like
now.
Maybe this year.
The future is now kind of deal.
It's different.
Yeah, and now remember the Patriots drafted Garoppolo second round. Brady's still there. This is, they were developing this guy. It didn't obviously work out for him there. They traded him off, and he got his money in San Francisco.
I think he's a good player. I go back, what was it, a couple years ago? 2 years ago, was it, that the Jet, we went to San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not really San Francisco. It's Santa Clara.
Right.
Okay, and the Jaguars were playing pretty well, and Jimmy Garoppolo in the play action did a number on the Jaguars' defense that day.
Really?
I mean, an absolute number.
Hmm.
And it was like, oh, my gosh. And that was either 17 or 18.
It would have been 17. Yeah, it was 17. It was 17. It was 44-33 at San Francisco on Christmas Eve.
Okay. That was the 2017 Jaguars defense now.
Yes, it was.
Which was
now, the
really
Jags,
good.
Jags had clinched by then, remember, that day.
Yeah, but they didn't play it like that. It's not like the Jaguars played that game. And now, they may have clinched it that day, but they came out to play now.
I think they clinched it.
They didn't
it
know it.
I think they,
because
okay.
It was a late game, okay?
That's right.
So it kind of happened in progress of that game. But here's the reality. They played that game to win it. And Jimmy Garoppolo and the play action, the Jaguars defense didn't have an answer. That's how challenging that they can be. And when Kyle Shanahan finds his groove as a play caller, which obviously he loves as our – you know, as any coach would love to be able to have a great running game, to be able to call play action and such, but that's right down Kyle Shanahan's alley, play action off of a really strong running game. And last night he didn't have to call a whole lot of play action. He just kept running the ball.
I'm going down the rabbit hole now of this, the box score of that game in 2017. Oof, bringing back some awful memories. All right, so defense. What kind of pass rusher is Nick Bosa? What do you like about him?
One of the best. What do I like about him? He does everything. He's not a one-trick pony. He's got power. He's got speed. He's a technician. He has counter moves. He is athletic. He plays the run hard. There's nothing not to like about Nick Bosa. He's better than his brother.
Better?
Much better. Nick Bosa.
How? Like, just what does the other Bosa not do well? Joey?
Doesn't play every snap like Nick.
Okay.
Nick Bosa, now this is, I haven't watched a ton of him this year, and he's coming back from an injury. But I can tell you before the injury, Nick Bosa would take over a game at any minute. He's that kind of talent. And I like him. I love him. I love guys that play the run. For example, Ngakoue.
Yeah.
Doesn't play the run well. Really sometimes acts as if he doesn't even care about stopping the run at times. But when he wants to.
Or slight of frame enough, at least in the days he was here, that he'd get pushed around a lot. If they got their hands on him, he's blocked. Right?
He would, I don't know, I'll say this again. He wasn't a willing run. He wasn't a willing run defensive player at times.
Okay.
That wasn't what. You know, it's like Deion Sanders didn't want to come up and make a big tackle.
Sure.
Okay, and Ngakoue didn't want to come up and, you know, stick his nose in there. But here's the crazy thing. When he wanted to, he was really good at it.
Yeah.
At times. Mm-hmm. But he's not a big guy. But anyway, that's what I love about Nick Bosa. The guy plays run. He plays pass. He plays left side. He plays right side. You can take him. You can kick him down as an inside pass rusher. Mm. He's athletic enough that you can drop him into coverage. I mean, he can do anything that you ask. I mean, if you had a Nick Bosa and a Josh Allen on the same team, look out. I mean, look out. you would have something. You would have definitely an offensive coordinator's nightmare.
If you're looking for the MVP of the truck game, then look no further than Ford F-150. Loaded with impressive capability and designed to dominate work, play, and everything in between, this truck makes tough look easy. No wonder it's the official truck of the NFL and proud partner of your Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll take a look at the injury report. We'll look around the AFC South. All that when we return. It's Jaguars Happy Hour on the Jaguars Digital Network.
I just said on the radio that, you know, culturally, you know, I'm a big believer in culture. I'm a big believer in leadership. I always have been, alignment, everybody working together. And enough with the almost. When we figure that out, that's when you win. And I like what was said. I didn't say much after the game. Some players did, and we'll see how we show up next week against San Francisco in front of our home crowd. But I hate to say this because I usually try not to when you lose, but that second half, boy, they on the road against a very good team, they played their tails off, man. And it wasn't pretty, but they could have sucked their thumb and left after the second quarter like you see some teams do. They didn't do that. So I hate to use the word proud, but I am.
That's head coach Urban Meyer. That was immediately after the game Sunday in Indianapolis. And welcome back. It's Jaguars Happy Hour. We'll hear more from Urban Meyer on the Urban Meyer Show in a little less than 10 minutes here on the Jaguars Radio Network. And veterans, choose VA for the benefits you've earned. Visit choose.va.gov.
Was Urban referring to you that he was just talking on the radio?
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, he's talking
right
to you.
Right after our conversation, he goes right into the press conference.
There. Ah, okay. Yeah. That's so good. He had a good conversation with him, and that's good that he gave that information to you first, as he should.
It's very nice. Yeah.
I like that.
First word with the head
like
coach
that.
After
like
the game.
That.
And you can only get that on the Jaguars Radio Network, yeah, which will begin at 5 o'clock.
When you have a coach, and just from my experience, sometimes coaches don't need to say anything after a game.
Just right? Lay out.
What I mean by that is that sometimes it's better if he doesn't say anything and just let the players say it or feel it, yeah, because they know. I mean, there's games that they know. I mean, what are you going to tell your team? Hey, look, you know, we can't come out and we can't allow two scores right out of the gate to the offensive opponent and then get a kick blocked or punt blocked for a touchdown. You can't win. I mean,
well, everybody knows that.
Hello.
Yeah.
Captain Obvious head coach. I mean, there's sometimes you don't need to say anything. You just kind of let it simmer a little bit. And sometimes it's more important sometimes what you say on Monday as opposed to what you say on Sunday after a game to get your team understanding and believing and getting better from that standpoint. It's the message that you carry to them on Monday and beyond.
Were you a big locker room speech guy?
No. No, I was never big into that. But, I mean, if I felt the need to say something, you know me, JP.
Oh, you ain't going to hold back.
Yeah. I don't – yeah, I'm not very good at not saying. Sometimes my mouth leads the way.
Yes.
But, I mean, that's –
but we know where you stand.
That's the good thing.
Know? Your teammates do.
That's a good thing. And I think that's also what players want. Players want to know where they want to stand. And but a coach has to be a little bit more measured sometimes because he has to have a little bit more thought and a little bit more reflection sometimes into the game to be able to react in a positive way. And when I say in a positive way, I'm not saying that you always have to go and have sunshine and rainbows to your team after you don't play well. But the positive way is that, in other words, you're giving them something that they can digest to help them and everybody get better. That's what I mean in a positive light.
Let's take a look at the Baptist Health Injury Report. Baptist Health changing healthcare for good. And, well, James Robinson, you know, was a question mark going into the game, of course. Had a game time decision. He went for it, and we'll see what he's listed as this week. I would guess he's still be on the report at some point, the way you know that went last week. And then there's the guys that are on injured reserve, and Urban Meyer said last week and that Brandon Linder might be available this week moving ahead, which would be a nice step coming off a high ankle issue.
Well, it was a high ankle and a knee, and so it's kind of twofold for him. Can he come back? You know, when we talked about this, I think it was last week, we were saying, okay, with a high ankle, because the high ankle typically is longer than the recovery of a knee that he had, that, you know, high ankle 6 to 8 weeks, and 6 weeks would put him back about this week, and that would be obviously the earliest time frame. So could he be back? Sure, he could be back. The nice thing is that you have the luxury of Tyler Shatley.
Yeah, right.
Which Tyler Shatley's a good football player. And so you don't want to rush something that doesn't need to be rushed when you have a Tyler Shatley. So you want to make sure that Linder's good to go, and that it's best for him, or it's the least likely for him to have a setback by coming back too soon, because you do have a good player that is playing in his place.
Let's take a look at the AFC South results from week number 10. Of course, we know the two teams that were in action against each other. The Jacksonville Jaguars fell to the Indianapolis Colts 23-17. The Tennessee Titans came away with a win. It was closer than they would have hoped earlier in the game. The Saints scored a touchdown late, but the Titans stopped a two-point conversion try with a minute 16 left in the fourth quarter.
Controversial game now.
Yeah, right.
This phantom blow to the head, right, that got called against the Saints. And I saw the replay of it. I think that was a terrible call. I think much like we had last week with Tony Corrente hip-checking Cassius Marsh, this is another blemish, I think, on the NFL with a bad call. And I think something's got to be done about it. And here's the problem that I have, JP.
Yes.
The call by Tony Corrente was a bunch of BS. Terrible call. Terrible call.
BS.
And then the league comes out and backs it.
Well, they were backing the taunting part of it.
That's not
the bench.
Taunting.
Well,
that's
by
never
the letter
been called.
Of the law and the emphasis.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
It
is not taunting. When you stand 20, 30 yards away from somebody, JP, if I'm sitting here going,
I'm taunted.
Are you offended?
I feel taunted.
Now, if I did that right in front of your face, nose to nose, it's worse.
8 feet away. We're socially distanced, but it's close enough.
To me, it's just, you have to do what's right. Okay, when the official calls taunting, and that's never been called before, when a player's been that far away from a bench area, it's never been called, and that official does a little hip check and doesn't throw the flag while the guy's standing there looking at the sideline. Mm-hmm. He throws the flag after he initiates contact
right.
into him.
Right.
Okay, so then you turn around and then you have this call with the New Orleans game.
Mm.
I mean, look, you got to get it right in the NFL. You got to get it right. And so for those that are at Park Avenue, you've got to start making sure that you cannot do things like what you've done last week and this week to lose credibility with your officiating department. If they mess up, then just own it, because nobody's perfect. And that's the problem that I have from the league office standpoint, is that they should have admitted that that was a mistake by Tony Corrente, and that it shouldn't have been called, and that they should have instituted some type of 1 week suspension for him initiating the contact on the player. Now, the official that calls this phantom call, first of all, I think every play should be reviewed. And then in that instance, that play should have been able to be challenged or reviewed to get it right. And I think the officials and the NFL need to address that.
Okay, I'm done with my rant.
Thank you.
Step down from the soapbox. We're about a minute away from the Urban Meyer show. Quickly, what do you like to hear from the coach tonight?
I want to hear about the offense. You know, I want to hear about, you know, how to fix it. You know, how do you go about changing the way and the direction of the offense as far as getting your young quarterback back on track? How do you quiet the noise?
A lot of football left to get that done, too. I mean, they got some time.
That's part of it.
Yeah.
You know, and I also want to, you know, commend him on the effort that the defense had. I mean, that was a really good job of keeping a football team in the game, because it almost felt like it was going to be a boat race early in that game.
17-0. The Jaguars had the ball with a chance to win late. Coming up, the Urban Meyer Show on the Jaguars Radio Network. This is Jaguars Happy Hour on the Jaguars Digital Network.